This is the September 25 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the program today are Naomi Bloom. She's at TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. Brian Stark joins us from the Andersons. He's in Mansfield, Illinois. And Arlen Suderman joins us from StoneX in Kansas City, Missouri. He's at StoneX.com. Of course, Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at willag.org. That's willag.org. One other place I urge you to visit is the Farm Doc website, farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. And look in the webinar section on Thursday of this week. Nick Paulson, Gary Schnicki, and Enrique Monaco, and myself put together a small webinar on fertilizer prices. We'll probably ask Arlen about this some too this fall and what they might mean for your crop budgets going into 2026. The easiest way actually to find that is simply to go to YouTube, youtube.com/@farmdoc, and look for the fertilizer webinar. Now, let's turn our attention to the marketplace. We'll get a list of items that we should discuss. Naomi Bloom from Total Farm Marketing, what's on your list this week?
Yeah, so I want to keep an eye on the quarterly stocks report next week, Tuesday, and that'll also be the small grains summary report. Sometimes that report can have unexpected pieces of news that can lend us a surprise to the market. So just want to make sure producers are keeping tabs on what that might say.
Brian Stark of the Andersons.
I think the biggest thing is watching and paying attention to cash basis direction. We all know that the crop feels still like a big crop in the central part of the U.S. Space can be a challenge at certain times, but we also have a warm, dry outlook, which means harvest could go very fast. And so patience might allow you to catch maybe a little bit of late season appreciation before those extra bushels that can't fit on farm storage move to town.
And finally, Arlen Suderman from StoneX.
Yeah, watching the yield reports as they come in, certainly that'll have an impact on expectations for future estimates that come out on the production side, but also looking at exports, which for corn and wheat are quite impressive, especially for corn. And that may be influenced a little bit by policy with the Mexican border, as Secretary Rollins now talks about the possibility of Mexico's border actually reopening for cattle.
Well, I do want to talk to you just a little bit about that. I used some commentary from you during the closing market report, courtesy of one of my colleagues at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting, Susan Littlefield, who I'm assuming you talked to this week about this just a little bit. Arlen, what is it that we think, and I don't believe this has been released at this point, at least when we're recording on Thursday afternoon, the USDA will do with the border, the New World screwworm, and relief for cattle producers, or at least for consumers?
Yeah, we've really been whipsawing the cattle market around this week because of conflicting headlines. First, when we got word from USDA early in the week that larvae from a New World screwworm had been found on a beef animal in less than 70 miles south of the U.S.-Mexican border in Mexico. And we assumed that that meant then that the border would be closed for a long time. Mexico tried to reassure that all was okay, that they had caught it before the larva turned into flies, and that it was simply an animal that had been transported north from an infestation area. But why in the world was it allowed to be transported north is a concern. But then she said later in the week that there's nothing that's happened yet to change expectations that the border will reopen before November. But in the original statement on Monday, there was a sentence, just a single sentence that really caught the attention of the market that said we could anticipate before the end of the week that there will be a policy statement from President Trump about rebuilding cattle supplies in the United States. And speculation went wild about what that could be. Does it mean opening up grazing lands, federal grazing lands for cattlemen? Does it mean direct payments to cattlemen like what we've seen for crops if they'll hold back heifers? Does it mean tax incentives? It could mean a host of different things. But the bottom line was the expectation in the market was it means an incentive program to hold back heifers for rebuilding the breeding herd. And so we saw an explosion higher of feeder cattle, particularly the deferred feeder cattle contracts. But then when Secretary Rawlins made the comment about the border reopening here over the next month, we took a lot of that back out once again. So it's been a volatile week based on trying to figure out what the administration is going to do regarding Mexico and regarding rebuilding the cattle herd.
Naomi, I know this is something that you follow closely. The idea that the cattle market is reacting to something the administration is doing is new, relatively speaking. We had gotten used to that in the previous Trump administration with the grains and oilseeds. How does that impact what you're trying to talk through your cattle producers with as you're on the phone with them each day?
Yeah, it just lends to the volatility in the marketplace and to remind producers to be ready for anything. Building on what Arlen was saying, not too long ago today, Secretary Rawlins had a little bit more details on her comments. Her direct quote that I'm reading says that, and this was, I saw it on Reuters, "We have no current plans to offer any payments to beef producers. We see how the government getting involved can completely distort the markets. And so currently there will be no plan. No plan is even under consideration to insert ourselves through payments into the beef cattle industry." So again, it leaves more confusion. It leaves more trying to understand, to Arlen's point, when will they open that border? Will they open the border? What other things is our government going to do to try to help this situation out? So for producers out there listening, we just have that volatility. The market also peaked when President Trump said that he was going to be working on ways to, in a sense, bring the beef prices down, that he was aware of high beef prices. And that was all it took for some backtracking and funds to exit some of these positions and technical selling to occur. So now short term here, to me, it feels like the cattle market might start to trade into a sideways consolidation pattern just as it waits for a next piece of legitimate fundamental news. But it is just a good reminder to producers how quickly prices can fall. So to continue to be mindful, have price protection in place, and just be in tune with this market every single day.
And I will, Arlen, give you one last option to talk about this if you'd like. Reuters, of course, historically has very good information as it's related to agricultural policy out of Washington, D.C.
Yeah, certainly. So that it did get some respect from that standpoint in impacting the markets. Question is, where do we go from here? What are we going to see for rebuilding the cattle herd? It was interesting also to note, related to this that happened this week, President Trump did have talks with Argentine President Milei, and when they ended the shortened export tax holiday for grain and oilseeds, because they'd hit their $7 billion target, they left it open indefinitely for beef and for poultry. And that's another source of beef coming into the United States. So I have to wonder if there was some influence there in that decision as well to try to fill the need to bring down beef prices here in the United States.
Well, on that note, I'll bring Brian Stark Hugh into this conversation because it did impact the price of soybeans, that tax holiday in Argentina. While it wasn't open for very long, just a few days, I think that the Chinese did manage, or Chinese companies did manage, to purchase about 20, maybe more cargoes of soybeans from Argentina.
Yeah, we've heard as many as 30 were purchased. And I think if that number is true or close to true, it could take out any type of Chinese demand through the balance of the year from an export window perspective. So beans have reacted negatively to that. Obviously, it's really hard to manage price risk at the farm gate when so much is driven by the stroke of a pen. And I think the producer obviously naturally, as he gets into harvest and looks as yields tends to lean into selling beans across the scale. So as we go forward, the market, obviously, with the uncertainty of demand and when we may see export pick up from a potential deal with China down the road, you're probably looking at early next year. And so we may be under pressure, at least for now, of any substantial bean rally here for the balance of the year, depending on how yields and actual yields shake out over the next 30 to 45 days.
Would you agree with that assessment, Naomi, that the that we're probably without substantial, and I don't know what that means exactly, substantial sales of U.S. soybeans to China through the end of the year? And China made a comment about this, too, that they didn't think that they would be buying anything unless tariffs were taken off by the president.
Right. I think that China's going to stay out of our market unless they find out, well, a couple things here. So what we're watching too is the Supreme Court. They're not going to be taking up the issue of are the tariffs legal or not until early November. So if I'm China, I'm going to wait to see what our Supreme Court says, are tariffs legal or not? Because then it makes negotiating a little bit easier if things are legal or illegal, or to test President Trump's true power on this situation. The other thing I think that China continues to watch is where in general our U.S. yields are going to end up being for both corn and soybeans. Because if both the corn and soybean yields come in smaller than expected due to the various disease, of course, on corn, and with the dryness in the eastern Midwest in August, now that could affect soybeans. If China comes in and sees that these yield numbers are smaller than expected, well, that really can shift the global balance sheet, especially for corn. And I think then just from the standpoint of prices still being on sale, China might be curious to come in and buy a little something just because they can buy value. In case we have a real price rally down the road, should the yields not be there. So we're going to be keeping an eye on that every week. But to Arlen's point, initially in the show, I mean, talking about how the corn export sales and the wheat export sales are fantastic, that's been supportive. But without a doubt, we need the soybeans to catch up if possible. But we'll also be watching the yields as well.
Okay, Arlen, so how is it that soybeans drag through the marketplace? I mean, and we'll get back to Brian about this as well, because it is a lot about storage and space, I think. And so the question then, is it a basis play or is it a futures play or a combination of the two?
I would argue that it's primarily a basis play from a storage standpoint. The low exports and the growing balance sheet would become more of a futures play. As far as it impacts things near term right now, it's finding a home for everything. Normally, trains would be loading up with soybeans as they're being harvested, particularly in the Dakotas and the northwestern Midwest and surrounding areas, and heading to the PNW. Pacific Northwest, we do see those trains moving with corn because a lot of our corn going to Southeast Asia certainly will keep the corn moving that way, but typically beans are as well, and there just simply aren't bids on the rail bid for many of these locations to move beans. And so therefore those beans, and that's where we're seeing some of our biggest crops is in the northwestern Midwest relative to normal. And so they're going to have a lot of bushels trying to find a home there. And that has an influence on central areas of the Midwest, for example, as well. Basis weakening, trying to keep those beans and the corn from flowing in their direction because they'll have their own issues with storage just from a couple of big crops. Now, smaller corn crop overall in the central and eastern Midwest in particular, but even some other areas, certainly eases that somewhat. But again, storage problems tend to work more out in basis unless you see a lot of crops being forced onto the market. Now, the farmers very undersold this year, so that increases the risk that we could see some bushels forced onto the market. But as we see the balance sheet start to grow for soybeans with each monthly report, USDA lowering their export target, that becomes a futures market factor for soybeans. And that's something we're going to have to watch, is how aggressive will USDA be? In their last report, they didn't even mention the lack of export sales to China. And so that's a concern of at what point will they acknowledge that and start lowering that export target more significantly.
Well, do you think, Arlen, that they have ever acknowledged it in the USDA supply and demand tables for this marketing year since they were put out in May?
No, they simply say that increased competition is lowering the export target. I think that they need to acknowledge that it's a lack of business to China and justify that reality. And it's interesting that I talked to a former USDA employee who's been involved with the WASDE committees. And he said, you know, there's no conspiracy in mind, but he said there is a culture to solve for a certain ending stocks there within WASDE. And I think that has kept them from reflecting reality to this point. And I think it'd be better if we saw reality now so the market could deal with that and then move on, like I think we've done with the corn market. The corn market had priced in the possibility of a big crop in August. So the most bearish news has been priced in, and now it can move on. I don't think the soybean market has really dealt with that yet. And until we deal with it, we can't move on, move past it, and start focusing on some of the positives.
Brian Stark, I'd like you to follow up on that. Maybe you can start with what the ending stocks might look like for the quarterly report. Naomi, I know you want to talk about this too, so you can follow up. But Brian, let's deal with the space issue first and what you think it does to basis.
Yeah, I think Arlen has summarized it quite well. I think it's absolutely a basis play. I've mentioned this on prior commodity weeks here in the last month that it seems like economically the best decision is to store beans on farm, but yet with a producer that's undersold, that's the quickest way to generate cash, and that tends to be the seasonal habit moving forward. But I also believe that because it is a space issue, the early yields that we're hearing are at or above expectations on soybeans, even with some of the dry areas we've received lacking rain. But the corn yields, because of disease, because of dryness, et cetera, have been 10 to 20 bushels below last year. And so that's kind of changed the mindset, at least in our East Central Illinois, West Central Indiana. And again, basis is local. Arlen spoke to the upper Northwest. Obviously, that's going to be a different scenario with the lack of PNW export for soybeans, and those beans could move to the Mississippi River. But I also think that if the corn crop does continue to reduce in size in certain areas in Illinois, some of the yields have been off, you may not see corn basis get as cheap as we once thought with the original estimates back in August with some of the actual yields. That also gives an opportunity for the producer maybe to get a better cash corn price and maybe reevaluate what he does use his storage for on farm with the soybeans, because bean basis is starting to feel some of that pressure even in this area, 40, 50, even close to 60 under in some spots in Indiana. So I think that is going to be the function of space. It's going to encourage the producer to keep the commodity that the market least can handle, which right now feels to be beans with a lack of a export book on. And I think the producer is going to have to be very sharp with his pencil on how he utilizes that space.
Now, Naomi, this makes next week's quarterly grain stocks report really important as it relates to soybeans, particularly because we know that that report at the end of the year really is very, very accurate, as there is a lot of accounting for soybeans that are used, unlike for corn, where there's the feed and residual number that is close but can be fudged through the process. USDA has made it better over the decades. Again, the quarterly grain stocks for soybeans, however, there is a pretty good accounting of what's used in any given year. And when they put that number out, it should reflect what's left in the bin and will impact what futures do and basis do, I would think, going forward.
Absolutely. So the quarterly stocks report reveals, you know, just the summary of what is both on farm and off farm for all the major grain and oil seeds. It just, to your point, you know, that kind of that final accounting number for the old crop. And then it sets our cornerstone as we function into the new crop year, especially as we gain harvest numbers, gain yield numbers, gain demand numbers. So of course, that quarterly stocks number, if there's any surprises in it, that again is the cornerstone for the new crop year, because the old crop comes into the market as new crop carry in. So we do want to know where this grain is. We'll get a breakdown by state. We'll want to know if it's in farmer hands. We'll want to know if it's in the end user hand, because then also we can kind of, maybe guesstimate a little bit more how basis might take into effect, places where there might be a lot of supplies still in the countryside. And so if harvest is coming in, how might that affect basis? So we want to keep an eye on that report from the quarterly stocks aspect without a doubt. And then also that small grain summary goes with it. And that'll be a look at all wheat production, every single wheat category, also looking at rye production, oat and barley production. And barley production and ending stocks has been drifting a little lower, as have oats, nothing in dangerous levels by any means. But these are the crops then that might gain additional acres next year, potentially, if you know, some of these higher input levels continue and if the cost of production remains high for corn and beans. So again, I really feel it's a big cornerstone piece for the upcoming crop year. And keep an eye on Tuesday at 11 o'clock.
Do you think that your clientele in Minnesota, North Dakota, Utah, might consider more wheat and barley because of the grain stock summary and whatever this small grain summary shows as well?
Well, I feel like they're really going to be putting pen and paper together to really understand where their costs are. As you had indicated earlier, with a rising cost of inputs, things are just expensive. And so they have to really start to figure out what they want to plant, what is going to yield an investment on their return. The University of Purdue recently put out an estimate for break-even costs for the upcoming 2026 crop year. They used average cost projections. And so, of course, there's range of difference in all of this, but they had said that corn break even over $5 a bushel, closer to $5.25. I think $5.35 is what I recall, and soybeans over $12 a bushel. I mean, these are cash prices, so farmers are hurting. There's no doubt about it. And President Trump alluded to that today. He was saying that his administration plans to use some tariff funds to aid American farmers. We know that the American farmer is hurting. We know that there's going to be potentially a shift with acres next year for various reasons. And again, this report Tuesday, in my opinion, is the cornerstone for producers to help decide, even though they're harvesting right now, what they're going to be planting in the spring.
Okay, so I did say Arlen, Utah, and I meant to say Idaho because I do know where barley and wheat are planted out west. And Idaho is one of those primary places for barley, Montana as well. But the Dakotas and Minnesota are a place that can shift their acreage, have, of course. They have pushed for more corn and soybeans first, actually. And I'm wondering whether you think that they will try to shift back, because the corn soybean rotation, once you get into it, requires a lot less labor and a different set of equipment. And I don't know how easy it is for them to change.
Yeah, I think one key to that is getting clarity on our biofuel program and what the demand for oils, edible oils, is going to be. We had hoped to have that by the deadline of end of October. But the EPA recently, in a court filing, made a statement that they plan on issuing it by sometime this winter. That was kind of a discouragement. That would really help. We know that exports are probably going to be struggling unless we get a trade deal with China that forces them to buy a lot of soybeans. But if we could get something on the biofuel side that would increase the demand, because right now the foundation of the program is looking solid, increase in demand for soy oil, canola oil, sunflower oil, etc., and that would certainly help and play into those planting decisions, especially up in the northwestern Midwest, Northern Plains region as well.
Brian Stark, that brings me to President Trump's speech at the UN this week that did address renewables in one form or another. At the beginning of the speech, or very early in the speech, he made a comment that said, "We're getting rid of falsely named renewables." He was mostly aiming, I know, when you read around that, at wind energy in particular. He didn't really mention, I don't think he mentioned solar. I didn't check that for sure. And then he closed in this way, and this was in the last 5 minutes. He said, in closing, just want to repeat that immigration and the high cost of so-called green renewable energy is destroying a large part of the free world and a large part of the planet. In the same paragraph, he goes on to say, you need strong borders and traditional energy sources if you're going to be great again. I'm wondering how that landed in the bioprocessing and biofuels world, and if there's very much worry.
I don't think there's a lot of worry. I think we've seen in generalities President Trump's support in some of the traditional biofuels that we see today that drives a lot of our balance sheet. I think you're absolutely right. I think his distaste for solar, wind, electric cars, some of the things that we saw in the past administration, the past 4 years, I think is driven mostly by his speech. Obviously, a lot need to be determined as we go forward. I think the RVO this past June was somewhat supportive of the soybean complex, and I think that certainly will continue to prop up potential demand. We've talked about this before, that meal obviously is the one variable that we have to figure out if we are going to use more oil and crush the bean. You still have 60% of that product that is not as storable as some of its competing feedstocks. And so what does that look like from a execution standpoint of ridding that, if that's the direction we go? But overall, I think we maintain a neutral stance. I think the industry as a whole is somewhat positive towards growing demand on the biofuel side of things here today.
Let's get a final word, I think, now from each of you. Naomi Bloom at Total Farm Marketing. I'd like the final word to center around, as producers are on the combine, what they should be thinking about as it's related to what they store on the farm and what go and particularly what happens to the grain and oil seeds that go across the scale.
I would say strongly that if you are selling any grain right at harvest across the scale, to really consider some re-ownership opportunities, just because actually we're back to a marketplace that has more questions than answers. And in that uncertainty sometimes is where we can see price rallies start to occur. Seasonally, corn, beans start to work higher from now until the end of the year. So because of that uncertainty, I would recommend re-ownership. If you're storing at home, really keep an eye on basis levels. Keep an eye. I'm watching specifically right now the December-March corn spread, which has improved just a very slow 2 cents. But we'll want to watch that to see if the marketplace is becoming concerned at all about the potential for a smaller crop size out there as these combines roll. So even though you're going to be busy with harvest, please keep your eyes focused on the market and on all the geopolitical aspects that are twisted into this. But again, re-ownership, I think, is a good idea for those selling across the scale.
Arlen Suderman from StoneX, your final word, please.
It gets real easy in this environment to get discouraged and just paralyzed by that discouragement. And just going to an attitude, a sense of going to the field and doing the work without doing anything about marketing, because it seems very discouraging to do so. And I get that. I understand that. But I think it's important here to keep in mind that we need to continue to keep focus and do the base hits, do something to help feel better about it, to take control of it. Little things, even if it be setting up a plan for how you're going to recover basis recovery, so to speak, particularly when we look at some of the areas where the basis is going to be the weakest at the harvest. We should be able to capture that. Read up and learn about strategies you can use for capturing the carry in the market. Just doing something to gain control and not let the markets control you and your emotions, but do something to be able to take steps. Maybe it's reaching out to get someone to partner with you in your marketing to help walk through it with you. A lot of times the spouse has more comfort in marketing than what maybe you do, but take some steps to kind of get out of the fog and out of the rut of discouragement and to be on top of your marketing, to feel a little bit better about things. We're not going to have prices that we're going to feel good about, but there are some positive steps we can take to improve on those prices and to take steps to at least benefit from it and make sure we're still in business a year from now. And so take some of those initial steps in that direction to feel better about things.
And Brian Stark of the Andersons, your final word.
Yeah, I think I'll just wrap those up and say sometimes the best sale isn't necessarily the crop that you're focused on. I think when there's potential unknowns and the fact that we could see a steadily grinding higher market through the month of October, that could take out some areas that are below APH's potential insurance indemnity. I think I agree with Arlen that we don't want to sit around and do nothing, but if we're waiting to see how prices evolve over the next 30 days through the month of October with the 25 crop and potentially a shrinking from the large start we had back in August, I think looking out to December 26, we've got as high as 470 here in the last 10 days. I know the producer often feels like he didn't do enough for the 25 crop. Always encourage them to look at the deferred year's economics to see if there's an opportunity where 5-10% we can start to create some floors and lock in some potential revenue if you have an idea on your cost structure, at least somewhat going into next year. Sometimes those sales are the best ones and maybe gives you a little courage to be a little bit more proactive in your marketing versus the reactive nature we were all in here for the 25 crop.
And we'll turn your attention to the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, which is online right now at willag.org or in the podcast. And it's in the podcast page there as well. I talk with Gary Schnicke. We go through some of the 2026 numbers as they're related to his expectations for the crop budgets. You probably want to listen to that in context of what we've been hearing from Brian and Arlen and Naomi at the end of this program as well. Our thanks do go to them, Naomi Bloom of Total Farm Marketing, Brian Stark of the Andersons, and Arlen Suderman of StoneX. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. You may hear the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.